afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Hello and welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and I'm excited about today's show. We're going to be talking about hearing loss in kids. Recent studies have shown that the music devices our young people are listening to are creating hearing loss far earlier than ever before. iPods, MP3 players, and other devices can deliver loud and prolonged sound right into the ears and threaten to damage the hearing of younger and younger people. Can we help young adults when their hearing is already damaged? Can we educate our teens to prevent hearing loss and still enjoy their music? My guest this week is Dr. Ellen Finkelstein, an audiologist and director of the East Side Clinic in New York City. She's become an outspoken advocate for helping people of all ages with hearing loss, and especially young people who may not even realize that their ability to hear is being progressively damaged. Yet even slight hearing loss can affect their school performance, their social life, and even whether or not they're responsive to their parents. So listen in and you'll find out how you can help someone and maybe really improve the quality of their life. I want to tell you a little more about Dr. Ellen Finkelstein before we start. Her team at Eastside Audiology works to improve the quality of life of their patients by providing comprehensive, individualized care for hearing-related problems. She holds patients' privacy and dignity in high regard and takes care to involve the families in any kind of treatment. She aims to stay on the cutting edge of new technologies with services that include complete diagnostic hearing evaluations for all ages, assessments of balance, dizziness, tinnitus, middle ear function, and ear and brain responses, and even more. Rehabilitative services include the most advanced hearing aids as needed and customized counseling and training. She also serves as a consultant to schools, nursing homes, and agencies and businesses interested in educating and improving services related to hearing protection. Dr. Finkelstein has made a number of broadcast appearances in her quest not only to help people to get appropriate help for their hearing, but also to educate and help people understand how they can prevent hearing loss. So I'm excited to have you on our show today, Dr. Finkelstein.
Thank you. I'm excited to be speaking about a subject that's so dear to my heart, because I'm seeing so many more young people coming into my office with some type of a symptom of hearing loss, and it's very concerning to me as a professional.
Yeah, it's a very scary thing, and it can go unnoticed and be blamed on so many other possibilities when something as simple as having a basic sense not working properly. So how did you first get interested in helping people with their hearing?
Well, actually, when I was in school and kind of floundering, at 18, 19 years old, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? I had a friend who taught at Lexington School for the Deaf at the time, and he just thought I would be a great teacher of the deaf. So I went down, I observed, and I just became very interested in hearing impairment and helping people. And I took the route of audiology as opposed to teaching. And I've been in private practice for over 30 years, and it's truly something, something that I'm very passionate about and very much enjoy, because I get to see people from all ages with all types of problems with regard to hearing and balance. And unfortunately now, more and more children are coming into my office for hearing loss as a result of noise exposure. So I've been doing a lot of work with parents and a lot of these kind of shows and things like that to try to get out there and educate people in terms of hearing loss and what to expect and all the other things that go with it.
Well, what is the most pressing problem that you see in families regarding children's hearing?
My biggest feeling is that I think what's happening is that parents are allowing children to be connected a little bit too much. And what I mean by that is it's not uncommon to see kids with earphones in their ears constantly, whether it's the iPod, cell phone, any of these devices. And these devices, unlike what I might have grown up with, Walkmans or CD players, if I can date myself, but these devices have the capability of being much louder and with extended battery lives on these devices. They have the children are listening to them constantly, so the ears aren't being given any rest, and as a result of it, they're just not connected socially, but we're exposing the ear to more of a harmful toxin. Noise is a toxin. So the more that they're exposed to this toxin, the worse that their hearing can become.
That's an interesting concept, having the noise being a toxin to the ears and the ears needing rest like any other organ. Can you give us an idea of approximately how many kids are affected today?
I would say probably my feeling is about before the age of 18 years old, I would say most young adults or children have had some type of an episode which can be contributed to noise exposure. It could be as subtle as an occasional ringing in their ears. It could be permanent damage. It could be temporary damage, but very often, it's not unusual for, again, young adults or young children to have some type of an incident prior to 18 years old.
Wow, that's amazing. I know I've been in concerts. I think I'm your same generation that you get out of the concert hall and you're like, wait a minute, I hope my hearing comes back. But that's a temporary thing. But that constant noise from the MP3 or the iPod is of a different nature.
Absolutely, because again, it's just constant. The decibel levels are, iPods, for example, have the capacity of delivering 130 decibels to the ear, and that's very, very loud. So if you think about that going to the ear for very, very long durations, it's a bit of a problem. It's also not uncommon to watch not only children, but adults be connected to these devices and have them so loud that you're sitting. I mean, I live in New York City. You sit on the subway, it's noisy enough, and I'm next to somebody with their iPod, and the leakage is tremendous, and I'm hearing what's going on there in their iPod. So I always say, if I can hear what's going on outside of their ears, you know, can you imagine how loud it must be for them?
My goodness. Well, for basic reference, what would he know is equivalent to 130 decibels? That sounds like a lot.
Let's think. If you go to a dance club, for example, that's about 110 decibels. If you go to a live concert, that's about 120 decibels. So if you just magnify that, that's pretty loud. So, and also you mentioned something about temporary hearing loss. What very often happens is that, you know, you go to a concert or you have some kind of an episode of noise exposure and you walk out and your ears start ringing for some hours and you have this clogged feeling or this fullness and then it goes back. And then over time that happens again and then it goes back. That's called temporary threshold shift, where you actually experience a temporary hearing loss. But what starts to happen is that over time, those hair cells in the ear become damaged. They do, like hair on our head, they can't be regenerated. And what happens is these hair cells aren't regenerated. The cochlea is not able to function. That's the sensory organ of hearing. And as a result, the permanent damage can come into play. So on the most extreme case, you can even have, I've seen people in my office who've been, for example, at a concert and they've had tremendous feedback right by their ears and they've went from a speaker and they've wound up with a permanent loss of hearing. So it's not always temporary. Sometimes it could be permanent as well.
Even from one exposure?
Even from one exposure. Shooting a gun, one exposure can do it.
That's amazing. So don't get your seats right by the speaker.
And
oh, my goodness.
To concerts, because they really do help, all kidding aside.
Yeah, I do that myself. Who is it that usually discovers that a child has impaired hearing?
Well, usually, sometimes you have parents who are very tuned into it, and they'll notice that the child starts to maybe not respond as well, maybe there's some behavioral problems, maybe they're turning up the television as loud. But usually some parents are more attuned to that, but I would think that, I find that most often the kids coming into my office are coming in because they're in school and they're exhibiting some type of a behavioral issue and the teacher is, maybe they're not hearing the teacher well. Is it attention span? Is it behavior? Or is it actually a hearing loss? So most most of the time hearing loss is picked up in school. Sometimes parents who are more tuned into their kids, they'll pick it up. And very often, but not often enough for my liking, children fail screenings at a pediatrician's office. And they'll refer them into my office just to see if there is actually hearing loss.
Do most pediatricians do hearing screenings? I wasn't familiar with that.
Not usually. I mean, in New York City, there are. I'm happy to say there are more pediatricians becoming more proactive, and in their offices, they're doing some kind of a quick screening, just to see if there's, you know, as part of a physical, and then referring out. But most of the time, it's not the case, and that's a bit of a problem, because if children have baselines, just like they have physicals, they should have some type of a screening. In schools, it is mandated at various points in a child's education to have screenings, and that's why very often hearing loss is picked up in school, because they may fail a screening. So even if they failed a screening because of behavioral issues and not hearing, at least it's been further investigated. So once a child has failed a screening at school, they must be referred out for a more comprehensive audiological evaluation. We're also picking up hearing loss much earlier when babies are born, because I know in New York State it's mandated, and most other states it's mandated that before children are released from the hospital, they have to have some kind of an objective testing, which can at least on some level give us an idea of whether or not the auditory mechanism is intact. And so we know if we should be monitoring these kids a little bit more closely and seeing if there's potential hearing loss.
That's really interesting. I want to come back and talk some more about how to discover hearing loss in the early years, but we're up on a commercial break now, Dr. Finkelstein, so we'll be right back.
Okay.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/voiceamerica or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe, has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Alan Finkelstein about hearing loss, particularly in children. And we were just talking about how pediatricians in schools are getting a little more proactive in discovering the hearing loss that children are suffering, mainly because of noise pollution. And noise is a toxin to the ears. That's just fascinating. So what we were talking about, some of the early signs, how would you discover hearing loss in babies and toddlers?
Well, we have these objective measures that allow us to do that. We can measure the actual, the ear gives off these sounds that are objectively measured, and we could measure these through something called otoacoustic emissions. So we look for these emissions, and if these emissions are present, then we know that the child's hearing loss, if at most, is mild. But if these emissions are absent when we're looking at that, then we know that maybe there's some kind of a middle ear pathology, or maybe there's some kind of a damage to the cochlear. So it puts up a red flag in terms of whether or not this child should be followed up further. In addition, we have some other testing where children are sedated, where we can actually get an idea through presenting objective types of sounds to the ears and monitoring certain electrophysiological responses. We're again able to see whether or not a child has mild, moderate, or any hearing loss at all. And the oldest way of doing it is we are able to monitor children in soundproof booths and look for certain reflexes like startle and things like that, to see if they respond to sound, to see if they localize to where sound is coming from. The older a child gets, it becomes the more able we are to precisely focus in on all the decibel levels and frequency, the decibel levels and where the hearing loss could occurred depending on frequency. So we are able to at least on some level identify earlier, and early intervention is always the best way to treat any kind of a hearing loss.
Yeah, it would seem like it would be just like sight, that these basic sensory responses are so critical in those early years to learn how to respond to their environment, to the people around them. They pick up so much kinetic information from hearing and balance, and I guess just whether they turn their head when there's a noise. Parents should be aware of these things.
Well, that's usually when a parent comes in and they're not sure, and even if we've talked about that, I'll tell them to do something like take a squeeze toy and take it to the right, take it to the left, see if the child, obviously not directly near, see if the child localizes, look for their eye movements, look for behaviors which we could see if there is localization. A lot of the hearing aid companies now also have made, if a child is hearing impaired, they've made their devices so that it's a little bit more, it's easier for us to get hearing aids even on children who are younger if they should need it. And of course then in children who really can't be helped by hearing aids, we now have cochlear implants. So there's so many ways of treating hearing loss. And of course medical treatment, if it's some type of, the most common kind of hearing losses have to do just with fluid or infection or even wax in the ear. And even, people think, oh, okay, big deal, the child has fluid. But we've found that repeated ear infections can lead to learning disabilities, auditory processing disorders. So it's very important to make sure that we are in tune with where children hear. Because what happens is, as a result of it, children who are left undiagnosed, they exhibit behavioral problems, they become very poor readers, they're very frustrated, they develop low self-esteem, low classroom performance, their speech is not as clear as it could be, their language perception. So it's a whole, it just kind of mushrooms into what can happen to kids who are left undiagnosed.
So they can really cause a whole, like you said, mushrooming and cascading down to affecting their mental and emotional life in all kinds of ways.
Absolutely.
Now, I heard about a study which indicated that teenagers have less awareness, or very little awareness of how loud their iPods are, and they often turn them louder and louder as they get used to them. So is there sort of a accommodation kind of thing where they can turn them up to louder and louder levels and not realize what they're doing to their ears?
Well, I think also what happens with teenagers is that there's this feeling that this could never happen to me, or I'm so young, this is never going to be my problem. I think that, first of all, many of these, you can download, like I know on the iPods, you can download software that will not allow it to go above a certain level. We can, very often I fit custom earplugs, that where the phones, the iPhone, the iPod phones or the earbuds can be put into these custom plugs. And while you're not, you don't want to encourage them to be doing it, at least the level of the sound is reduced because the physical plug in the ear attenuates or reduces the sound that gets to the ear. Noise-canceling headphones are also a good way of addressing this issue. But my favorite is education. I think that, number one, you have to start educating children very early about the possible effects of hearing loss. And I think that also children learn by imitation. So if they see their parents with power tools, wearing, you know, not using ear protection, or their parents using cell phones and devices and, you know, constantly, they're going to mimic that behavior. So I think a lot of what we can do in terms of prevention is not only education, but also you learn by copying what your parents do. So you know, if we're going to be enforcing this, you know, and trying to teach our children how to address hearing loss, then we have to be proactive ourselves and say, okay, if I'm going to listen to an iPod, I'm not going to blast it. I'm not going to be totally connected all the time. I'm not always going to be on my cell phone. I'm not going to have my speakers up so loud that everything's vibrating. So I think that that's very important in terms of developing awareness with regard to hearing loss and noise exposure especially.
That's such an important point, that parents really are the model, and they do what we do much more than they do what we say. And if we think we can listen to music loud, they're going to think so too. Or if we turn up our cell phones, I think that's is that something that parents should look into, the software that can limit the decibels?
I think parents should look into that, and I think that they should look into ways of getting their kids to just reduce the level of the sound. They should maybe limit the exposure. So, don't allow your kids to be sitting in the car for a two-hour ride with their iPods on, because it's easier for you not to have to deal with them, you know, being restless. And figure out alternative ways to stay connected to the kids without forcing them to be using these devices.
So now you're talking again about good parenting, not finding babysitters that are
right.
Dangerous for the child. That's really important. A lot of kids have their own bands in the basement, so to speak. Their speakers, if they practice with their friends for 2 hours, that could be a problem as well. Is that correct?
Well, it can. So what I do is I work with a lot of musicians in my particular practice. And if you have a child who's a musician, then I always encourage them. There are custom plugs that have been scientifically developed with regard to music and the appropriate frequencies and attenuation. So if you have a youngster who's playing the drums or playing the guitar and practicing, they should be encouraged to have actually custom professional earplugs where they have attenuators that are in that will reduce the decibel level. And again, we forget about that. I have a number of young people who are flutists or drum players, percussionists, and they think, oh, you know, they're younger, but they really do need these custom earplugs, just as the older adults, you know, the older musicians do. So I think that it's an investment in your child's health to encourage them or to purchase these custom devices, which will allow them to at least attenuate the sounds appropriately and, again, reduce the exposure directly to the ear.
Yeah, so that makes so much sense. I see performers on the stage who have earplugs if they need them, then we who are listening to the loudspeakers on the other side need them too.
Right. I've been fitting a lot of musicians. We have some very wonderful brand new technology, and I've been fitting a number of musicians with this technology. And they've been doing great. These are great hearing aids and whatever. But the first thing out of their mouths, one person I'm working with who's in his mid-50s, he's like, I just want to get out there and tell everybody, protect your ears. Don't be like me. Protect your ears. Protect them younger. Get these earplugs. Do what you need to do.
That's great. It's important for people the kids look up to be part of that voice. So I'm concerned about children who might be marginally hearing impaired and be diagnosed with behavior problems or even be drugged for depression or shyness. How do you reach those kids and their families?
That's a tough one, because I think that requires, you know, that's part of the whole, you know, looking at the whole child. And again, if parents are aware of where their children's hearing levels are, they can be very good advocates for their children in classroom situations. So, for example, if you know that your child has a mild hearing loss, while they might not be candidates for hearing aids, they may still requires more attention. So what I would suggest is looking for insisting that those children are put in areas where the preferential seating, where they're directly able to hear what's going on with the teachers. So teachers have to be aware of the fact that they have to be attuned to the fact that these children do not hear well enough to function in a classroom situation. Reducing the signal-to-noise ratio in a classroom situation is very helpful for children who have some type of either an auditory processing disorder or mild loss of hearing. We use a lot of auditory trainers for these kids, where maybe you don't need a hearing aid in a classroom situation, but there are devices that the teacher can use to enable the student to hear better, because just by virtue of the fact that you reduce the background noise in the classroom and you key into what the teacher is saying, you are able to boost the child's ability to learn in a classroom situation. So I think that, again, being your child's best advocate with regard to education and insisting and having meetings with the school and saying, look, my kid is got a marginal loss of hearing and whatever, and this will cause behavioral problems, whatever, this is how we have to manage my child, I think that's we're our children's own best advocate.
Yeah, that makes so much sense, having the parents and the teacher. The parent just even just saying, you know, my child needs to sit a little closer to the front, or don't play the sample opera too loud or whatever.
Right.
Just seeing what the environment is, and that, again, that's the parent being involved in the child's life. So we're up on another break, Dr. Finkelstein. So when I come back, I want to talk about the kinds of hearing assessment that you do and some of the new technologies that you mentioned earlier. So keep listening and look forward to learning some more.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
The Total Education Network is the only network that airs shows 7 days a week on various stations. Please go to our website, www.totaltutor.org, for more information about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide educational news and tips for parents. The Total Education Network, the talk shop for parents, teachers, and administrators. That's www.totaltutor.org.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Ellen Finkelstein, who's director of the East Side Clinic in New York City, and she's been in practice several decades and has seen some major changes, some real problems developing in our young children from noise pollution, from both the amount of noise and the consistency with which they plug it into their ears. And so we've been talking about parents and schools and pediatricians being more proactive in discovering these issues, because they are often masked as behavioral or lack of attention or shyness. So it's important to make sure your child is actually hearing. So I wanted, Dr. Finkelstein, for you to walk us through, once someone came to your clinic, what kind of hearing assessment would you recommend, say, for a 6-year-old or a 7-year-old?
Well, a 6 or 7 year old is usually assumingly cooperative and could be, if they have a great attention span, it's a very easy population to test. If not, then we need repeated visits. But usually they come to my office because either they've got the physician, either they failed a screening, parent is concerned, maybe there are also what we've neglected to mention is that maybe they've have some kind of a family history of hearing loss or some kind of a genetic predisposition or some type of a birth or developmental delay. Maybe most usually we see language and speech delay. So maybe as part of a full workup, they may be referred to my office. And simply just parents who say, you know what, I want to have my child's hearing tested. So they come into the office, and of course we do, you know, and I have a private practice in Manhattan. So they come into my office most of the time through physician referral, but not always. And, you know, we talk, we discuss what the parents' concerns are, whether or not they really feel the child has a hearing loss. And then I do a very traditional type of a hearing test where we, you know, we put the child in a soundproof booth, but of course in a non-threatening way. We make it a game. We put earphones on. We present some tones and try to find out the lowest level that the child's able to hear sound. And then we do some speech testing, meaning that we present some words, and again, with the goal of finding out the lowest level that the child hears sound so that we can determine exactly where the hearing thresholds or the hearing loss will occur. In addition to that, I always do a test for middle ear function, so that if a child comes in and they're saying what a lot, and if I take a look in the ear, first I also do an otoscopic examination and determine whether or not the eardrum looks good. I have specialized cameras, you know, an otoscope with a camera that I can show them exactly what the eardrum looks like or whatever. So we do an otoscopic examination prior to the testing, and then I do some testing to move the eardrum back and forth to see if there's fluid or infection or anything like that that could be causing a hearing loss. And then finally, we do these otoacoustic emissions testing, which again, we look to see if these, that I discussed earlier, if they're present or absent, and we go from there. If a child appears to not be doing well, I usually bring them back, meaning that, that there's a possibility of a hearing loss. I'm very cautious in saying that to a parent. So I usually maybe bring them back, make sure that the child wasn't having a bad day, just make sure that everything is accurate. And in fact, before I sit down and counsel a parent, if there is hearing loss, I want to be very certain that that child does in fact have hearing loss. So, you know, then after we do all our audiological evaluations, we sit down and we talk about the results. And very often I'll have children in who have perfectly normal hearing, and even at 6 or 7 years old, I'll say to them, well, do you listen to your iPod? Remember, you can't have it up too loud. Don't sit too close to the TV. Don't, you know, I'll start to educate them when they come in the office, directing it towards the child, but really, you know, but including the whole family in the discussion.
That sounds great, just to help them learn to keep their hearing. And it's interesting that there is emissions from the ears, and people don't think that our ears are giving off sound, but that's a vibration you look for that says that the ear is actually working properly?
We look for vibrations, and we look for other electrophysiological responses. You know, we have norms, and we have more sophisticated equipment if necessary. If I do other testing, but that we don't really do unless we really suspect a very severe loss of hearing, and we need to confirm it. So yeah, there are objective tests built in the battery. There's not only subjective tests; there are objective tests as well.
Yeah, the interesting, you have cameras. I mean, people are used to their dentist taking an x-ray, but you can actually show them what's going on in their ear as well.
It's great. They get a kick out of it. They love to see their eardrum.
Yes, little tiny drum. So tell us something about the new hearing aid technology that can help children perform better in school, and maybe if the teenagers don't want friends to know that they're wearing a hearing aid. What are the new technologies that you can apply in those cases?
From a hearing aid point of view, it's revolutionary what's happening with kids. Traditionally, we fit kids with these big, they look like, I used to call them banana hearing aids, these big, huge hearing aids with big molds. And, you know, they were very obvious, and kids didn't want to wear them because they didn't look cool and they were uncomfortable to wear. Most of the companies now have come out with very discreet-looking, fun-looking hearing aids. So one company I do a lot of work with is Widex. Widex just came out with this clear line, and in this clear line, they have these very funky looking hearing aids that go behind the ear. They're available in all different colors, so you can come in and you can get a hearing aid that's red or green or pink or whatever you want. And they actually kind of look like iPods. You know, they have that maybe a white and red or a white and pink. So that's kind of fun, and they can come in and they could do that. And the other thing that we do is a lot of hearing aid fitting where we have the very small discreet looking hearing aids. So, for example, this Widex Fusion, we could do that in a very funky color, and then there's a very, very thin wire that's really almost invisible, and then what we call a receiver, or the speaker, is in the ear. So the ear mold or the hearing aid is not as visible. When you look at the ear, you can't really see it like you can a more traditional ear mold. So we can fit with this hearing aid, with this Fusion, for example, we can fit a very mild loss of hearing, we can fit a more severe loss of hearing, we can fit a profound loss of hearing just by changing the, what we call speaker size or the receiver size. So if you have a child with progressive hearing loss, that's very good because hearing aids are quite expensive these days, and, you know, especially, you know, for parents to have to constantly be replacing hearing aids, it's very costly. So these hearing aids can be adjustable so that we can fit, if a hearing loss should, God forbid, get worse, we can change the way the hearing aid performs, not only through the mold, but also through what we call the program. They're very tiny computers, these hearing aids, and their ability to reduce noise is quite significant and enhance speech, and our ability to change these hearing aids depending on the level of hearing loss is tremendous. So it's really, it allows us to get much more accurate hearing aid fittings, and the child becomes more, I think the best way to put this is accepting of the fact that, yeah, okay, I have to wear a hearing aid, but these things can be cool. They have digital chips in them. They're as powerful as laptops, and they really look cool. They're less obvious than walking around with a Bluetooth device in your ear.
Yeah, and that's nice, and a lot of people are doing that these days, too, so it's not so odd anymore to have a little colorful thing somewhere around your ear, but I think once they have experienced it a few days in school, do they also become more accepting that this is really a benefit to them?
That's, you know, it's very hard. I mean, you know, it's very easy to be, you know, as a professional to say, okay, you know, this is great, these look good, you can be connected, you can have little remote controls and little iPods. But again, there's a lot of education going on, and you know, with kids, it's better to see that, you know, to not be wearing these big hearing aids, small hearing aids, because they are discreet. But again, a lot of, you know, counseling and education and awareness is important. But I think nowadays a lot of kids are more, I think we're more accepting of being able to help children with regard to hearing loss or visual impairments. And so I think that that's a very positive step that we're taking, with regard to our certification.
And I assume you said you try to talk to the child so the parent hears all of it too. So you help the parent take the right attitude towards their new use of the devices.
Oh, absolutely. And also when I'm fitting, the nice thing about, I mean, most of these kids are more computer savvy than I am. And so when you come in, so let's say a child comes in and I fit them with these very cool looking Widex Fusion hearing aids. And then what I say to them is, look, and I can give them a remote control. So that remote control or what they, Widex calls a DEX, but hearing aid companies have different names for theirs. So they can take their little remote control and they could pair it to their iPod so they can stream music directly into their hearing aids. They can pair these things to their TV so they can stream right into the TV. They can use them in school. So where traditionally, if they've had loop systems, maybe the kids have had to wear something and the teachers have to wear mics, these devices enable them to get the hearing aids to be compatible with the loop systems. So again, this all works in terms of getting the kids to feel less isolated and for them to be a little bit more accepting of wearing hearing aids, because they're not, there's not as much of a stigma in wearing hearing aids.
Right. That's very, very high tech. I'm glad there are people like you who are really staying up on this, and it's so critical that kids be able to interact. I know there's been in the last few years a better understanding of how many people are deaf or hearing impaired, and a lot of kids think it's neat to learn sign language. And but if they can hold on to their hearing or improve it from the beginning, that's so important. We're up on another break, so we'll be back in a moment with Dr. Finkelstein about tips for preventing hearing loss.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news. And provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolf has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolf has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolf. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolf@randyrolf.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Ellen Finkelstein, who's an audiologist and has private practice at Eastside Clinic in New York City. And she's become a very outspoken advocate.
Eastside Audiology.
Excuse me?
Eastside Audiology.
Oh, didn't I?
Oh, no, I said it's Eastside Audiology.
Oh, I'm sorry. Eastside Audiology.
Sorry.
Yes. Okay. Sure. She's helped many, many people of all ages, but we're focusing on the increasing hearing loss in our children because of prolonged and loud noise exposure. And I wanted to ask tips for preventing. We've talked a lot about diagnosing and treating and the effects of not getting diagnosed early enough or appropriately enough. But what are some of the things that parents should be aware of to prevent hearing loss or prevent it from progressing if possible?
Okay, well, I think we've discussed at length noise exposure, but we also have to recognize that there are other factors involved. So in looking at hearing loss. So I think that we should look at physical conditions of children. So if children have ear infections, we shouldn't allow those to go untreated because they can result in permanent hearing loss. Avoiding the usual, smoking, caffeine, alcohol, drugs, things like that. Ear protectors, are very important in terms of prevention of hearing loss. They, you know, again, if they're going to be exposed to noise or whatever, we should encourage our children to be wearing earplugs, even if they might look kind of goofy if they're going to a concert. You know, my kids made fun of me. I stick them in, you know, I would give them earplugs. So things like that, encouraging, educating about giving the ears a rest and limiting the exposure to high volumes of noise for long durations. Again, using noise-canceling earphones. I think stricter government regulations would be great. Product warnings would be good. And again, education in terms of early intervention is very, very important. Even with drugs, a lot of the medications that we take these days can be ototoxic. So I think that avoiding those types of medications or carefully administering those kind of medications is important too. Things like that.
So that's an important point that you should notice if a child becomes uncooperative after taking a medication, it may be audiotoxic. That's interesting.
Correct.
And what kind of, you said warnings on products, like when a child gets their new cell phone, they could limit the volume or they could recommend software to limit an iPod's decibels?
Many of the products do. I mean, I've opened the products and they'll say warning, you know, the excessive use can cause hearing loss or whatever. So I think that, you know, just like we have warnings from the FDA on food and things like that, the more that we, you know, hopefully if the government had some stricter regulations about noise and the amount of noise, maybe it would bring about more awareness in terms of product. Maybe even purchasing a product or using a product properly.
Okay. As a former practicing lawyer, I'm interested in who regulates that kind of product. Would that be the Consumer Product Safety Commission?
I myself would be unsure of that. I know that there are certain things that are FDA approval is necessary. Mm-hmm. So that's, I'm not, I myself, you that's your, as a lawyer, you would probably know that information better than me. But I think that government standards from it, you know, because this is also health involved, I would think that you know, maybe the FDA has to be looking. I know the FDA has been looking very carefully at hearing aids over the last couple
of
years.
Right, right.
And so maybe the FDA should start looking a little bit more at cell phones and MP3 players and other things. In terms of what's exactly happening. So, I mean, as I said, if they're looking at hearing aids, which are here to really help us, then they should also be looking at those other things that are there to harm us. If not,
right. Yeah. So it could be a couple of agencies that would be appropriate to pay more attention to this issue. That's very interesting. But meanwhile, we have to work with the individual family and the individual child. And those are great, great advice. And so you're finding that you mentioned smoking, alcohol, caffeine, that they can affect the hearing as well?
Absolutely. And they also can affect very often, and this is probably the first interview, thankfully, where I haven't had to discuss this more than anything else, but everybody's favorite subject is tinnitus, and which is some noises in the ears. So I think that if a child, for example, says, you know what, mom or dad, my ears are ringing, or, you know, and rather than saying, yeah, right, not really happening, maybe listening to something like that, because that could be a sign of a hearing loss or some kind of a problem with the ears. So that's kind of a red flag. So listening to what your kids say, you know, if they say something like that, or, gee, you know, my ears are ringing, really to take that seriously, or watching them if they're turning up the television too loud, are they sitting too close? These kinds of things are very important, and that should put a red flag up to the parent that, okay, maybe there is something wrong. And again, you know, a lot of us, when we have children who, you know, we might not think of birth issues or developmental delays as being related to hearing loss, but again, we have to look at that and bring children in who are high-risk kids for hearing loss and just get some baselines done, get a baseline audiogram. I had a very anxious parent because their child has some type of a genetic syndrome that hearing loss can occur when they're 20 years old, and they brought this child in at a very young age and said, you know, we're very concerned that at 20 years old they'll lose their hearing, so we really want to be able to monitor this so we can be more proactive in terms of how to treat our child if the hearing should go down. And I thought that was remarkable, because they were bringing in a 5-year-old and they were recognizing that this could be a problem, and we'll develop a relationship and watch this without getting the child crazy or the parents crazy. We'll monitor that child and hopefully not get to the point where the hearing loss has occurred, but at least there's information available to us so that we can watch it. And if medical intervention is the way to go, we're monitoring it early enough to get to it.
Oh, that's so important. That's one of my favorite passions, is that parents need to be in touch and watching. And in my book, The 7 Secrets of Successful Parents, the second secret is paying attention to basic needs, you know, being able to hear and see and sleep. And it's the parent's job to notice if something's starting to get amiss. So that's a great story. The parents are really being proactive. We're coming up on the close of the show already, and I want to be sure everybody knows how to contact the Eastside Audiology Clinic and get more information, your website, and so on. Could you share those, Dr. Finkelstein?
Okay, thank you. And thank you for allowing me the opportunity to discuss this subject that I'm so passionate about. I'm in Manhattan. I practice on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. The name of my practice is East Side Audiology. I'm Dr. Ellen Finkelstein, and my website is eastsidehearing.com. It's a very informational website for all ages, and I invite everybody to look at it, and if you have questions, you can shoot me an email, give us a call. We're more than happy to answer questions, or if you have concerns, even if you're not in the, you know, in the Manhattan area, I'm very happy to, you know, help you out in terms of finding the most appropriate way of addressing your needs and, you know, giving you some direction as to where you should go or how you should start in your own personal areas.
That's very generous, and her website is very, very rich, and there's recordings of other interviews and lots of information and references, so do go there and stay on top of your child's audio health. And thank you so much for being a guest, Dr. Finkelstein.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaHealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.